Chase from the Comic Source here. This is another Aftershock Monday episode, and I have a real treat for you. It's a book from Aftershock that's coming out real soon. It's actually going to be debuting a zero issue on New Comic Book Day. It's got Andy Clark art, which, I just literally can't wait for this book. So without further ado, I have the writer with me, Zach Thompson. Zach, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jace.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. So for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with your work here, before we get into some of the things you've done previously, how about a quick rundown about your history with comics? Did you grow up reading them? Did you always want to work in the field? Like, how did you come to be in the medium?
I always loved them. I had an older brother growing up who shared his random back issues of Uncanny X-Men with me throughout the 90s. And so I ended up becoming really in love with some of the crazier aspects of the 90s X-Men, the time travel and the hulking guns. And I think that in contribution with the cartoon and Batman the Animated Series kind of made me like a comic freak, but not really super in depth with what was going on in the comics, but rather just like the characterizations on Saturday morning cartoons. The first stuff I started reading, like serialized, was like Archie comics way back in the day. My mom used to buy them, and I used to take them from her and read those whenever I could get my hands on them, which is really funny considering I write pretty much the opposite of Archie comics.
Yeah. And did you always want to work in the medium, or did that just kind of happen?
It kind of just happened. I mean, I've always loved them. I think like probably 5 or 6 years ago, I started floating the idea of working in comics because I wanted to be a screenwriter for a really long time. And I directed some short films and didn't really feel like my vision was being represented in that process, mostly because it's just like when you're doing student films and low budget shorts, it's really hard to find people who have the same sort of investment level as you in terms of bringing your kind of vision to completion. And I started to look at comics in a really interesting way, that the teams were small. They were often around from the inception of the idea, and more often than not, everyone was contributing to tell the same story. And I started to explore that. I was in film school at the time, writing screenplays, and actually that's where I met my co-writer, or the guy I work with on most things, Lonnie Nadler. And him and I had took my final project from our screenwriting program. It was a script called The Dregs, and that's what we turned into our first comic.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's something I hear a lot of writers talk about. What's great about comics is there's no special effects budget. You can make it as big and as crazy as you want. As long as you have an artist that can draw it, you're set, right? It doesn't cost any extra to set it in space or some crazy alternate universe.
Exactly, yeah. And I also think the barrier to entry is a lot lower in terms of you can kind of get away with, you know, like my first book is called The Dregs, for those who are not familiar. And it is a homeless detective noir with cannibalism, which is the best way to pitch it. But like that, if you went into a movie studio and you pitched that as a film, they'd be like, get the fuck out of here. You can't,
right.
You can't make that. And so it was really interesting. Comics was very, very receptive to something that kind of crazy. And I think that comics work off of that kind of weird X factor where it's like, they're often years ahead of the curve socially and in terms of storytelling. And so you can get away with some really interesting like risks or creative challenges that you wouldn't get in more mainstream pop culture because there's so much money at stake.
Right. I agree 100%. And you mentioned The Dregs. What are some of your other previous titles that our listeners may have heard of or may want to check out?
So The Dregs came out in early 2017. That was at Black Mass Studios. Shortly after that, we started working on a book called Come Into Me. That's like a Cronenbergian body horror book that's also at Black Mask. Issue 2 will come out the May or the first Wednesday in May. And then
I think that's the second. Yeah.
Yeah. The May 2nd and then issue 3 and 4 in June and July, immediately after. And then, we also have Her Infernal Descent at Aftershock. The first issue came out on April 18th and sold out. So if you haven't got your hands on it, the second issue and the reprint is coming out next month. I don't have the date off the top of my head, but just give me 2 seconds and I can find it. But that's a modern retelling of Dante's Inferno, starring a middle-aged mom who goes into hell to find her forsaken family. And it's real weird. It's kind of a spiritual sequel to The Dregs in that it kind of plays with genre conventions and adapting very familiar texts in new and interesting ways. And the second issue comes out on May 23rd with the reprint of number one. And then I also write Cable at Marvel, starting with issue 155. And that's just a weird time-traveling book.
Yeah, and definitely a name listeners should be familiar with. Real quick, before we start talking about the new title from Aftershock Relay, I have to tell you, so I know someone who is going after her PhD in English literature and specifically focusing on the Divine Comedy. And sure this is the first issue of Her Infernal Descent. I haven't had a chance to get her reaction yet, but maybe somewhere down the line, it'd be great to have you come back on and have her on. And I mean, you guys could just, you know, get down into the depths of it and I could just eavesdrop. So we'll have to see if we can make that happen.
That sounds great. Yeah. I mean, we've been getting feedback from different universities and stuff this past week that it's really resonating with people in those sorts of environments. And it's been very interesting because we almost didn't consider that whenever we started to conceive it. And now it looks like it's going to have a home in a whole kind of different market that we didn't anticipate.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, let's end the suspense. Let's let everyone know what Relay is all about. What's the overall general story that you're trying to tell in this new science fiction title?
So Relay is kind of it's about the universe embracing its first monoculture. That is to say that the Relay is established on every discovered planet, and it creates a seamless kind of singular culture. So almost think like the Borg from Star Trek, but they're the good guys. And what our main character discovers in the first issue is that the stories and the legends of how this Relay came to be are all founded on a lie. And so this monoculture isn't peaceful and it's not for the benefit of humanity.
So maybe they aren't the good guys after all.
No, they are not.
And you're really taking some inspiration from a short story from Philip K. Dick. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So about a year ago, I got a call from Donnie Cates at like 2 o'clock in the morning. I shit you not. The guy never sleeps, I think. And he kind of, we were talking about Philip K. Dick, and both of us have a huge affinity for the writer and, you know, science fiction epics like the Expanse series. So we were just chatting about that kind of thing, and Donnie confided to me that he had this pitch at Aftershock that he didn't have time to write. He had this complete story outlined, and just with the, this would have been right before his Marvel exclusive contract was announced and things were ramping up for him significantly. And so he sent me, I had never read The Souvenir from Philip K. Dick, but it's a story that's in the public domain currently. And the idea is that the relay system exists in this short story. It's a guy who goes down to a planet and interacts with this ancient sort of leader of a planet and offers him a chance to join this monoculture. And in talking, things get heated and he ends up taking a souvenir cup from this guy's planet. And I won't tell you how it ends, but in true Philip K. Dick fashion, it's pretty bleak and kind of about the nature of reality and how flimsy it is. And we tried to basically take that short story and expand around it to imagine the parts of this world that were only alluded to. I think the story is only about 13 pages. And so to kind of get in depth about what Dick was kind of building towards in that short story, but never really got there. And I think it's in a similar vein to like what was done with like the Total Recall movie in the 90s, taking like a central sort of like thesis from Philip K. Dick's world, but really, really building it outward into a place where it's completely inspired by his story, but if you're familiar with Souvenir, it won't spoil anything for you. It'll only enhance your reading experience.
Yeah, what's interesting, I've read The Souvenir, you know, way back when in high school. But what's interesting is, you know, this guy goes down to visit the planet and he invites them to join this monoculture, as you said. And it's like, you know, there are bonuses. There are things that would be good. You know, there are reasons to join the monoculture. And I'm sure you're going to be kind of exploring that as well as the cons, right? There are always downsides too. So is that something that you are indeed going to be exploring throughout the series, kind of the dichotomy there, the choice, the differences, pros and cons?
Yeah, and I think there's characters who represent every kind of facet of that argument in the story. I think when the first issue picks up, you kind of have the sense that the main character, Jad, he works for the relay system. And so he's obviously pretty in tune with the idea that monoculture is good and that he wants to kind of spread it out as like an emissary. But you see around him, the people in the city are protesting it and they're not super trustworthy of the stories that they've been told. And like anything that kind of governs society, there's people on either side who think it's a good thing and a bad thing. And I think that exploring that through character lenses is the most interesting thing to me, because I'm a very big fan of sort of ambiguity in stories and letting the characters kind of perception of what they're talking about define the way that we see it. And so over the course of the five issues of Relay, you start to understand more about what the Relay does, but you never have a clear, actually that's not true. You get a clear answer kind of in issue three, but the monoculture and people who are for and against it is throughout the entire series.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at it on the surface, it's like, oh, well, we're offering to advance you. You know, everyone's going to have the same, you know, level of technology, and there's all that kind of stuff that is, as we said, the benefit. But then really, when we look at humans and society, there's this concept of individuality and, you know, diversity, and, you know, we're each kind of unique in our own way. So it almost seems like, in a way, the idea of monoculture is kind of dichotomous with the way we all kind of identify as individuals and, you know, put ourselves in these groups, right?
Yeah, and I think it calls into question if it's actually beneficial to bring everyone to a baseline, because, you know, you have that sort of evolutionary factor where survival of the fittest happens, and you're bringing dead weight on, and, you know, not everyone's going to get on board. We visit some other planets during the course of the story that aren't in perfect harmony with the Relay. And just because it's been established there and everyone's kind of agreed at the beginning to kind of follow its decrees doesn't mean that 300 years later, they're still following the decrees. And so you start to see that individuality reigns, and the idea of monoculture is to kind of like pave over any sort of individuality and to just create like one synonymous reality that everyone shares. And it's very, very controlled and oppressive.
Right. And then when you start talking, I mean, because that's another aspect of it, right? It's one thing to have this monoculture where everyone has kind of the same technology and you're all working toward the same goal and things like that. But it's another for it to be oppressive. So you don't have self-determination and free will. You know, you're told, okay, in order to advance this monoculture, your skills are this and you've got to do this, and we're telling you what to do. And at that point, it's like, well, what, yeah, it's great that we have this level of technology and medicine and this and that, but what's the point if you're just a slave to the machine, right?
Exactly. And I think that the impetus for the story itself is kind of breaking away from that, especially when there's something that happens at the end of the first issue that kind of calls into question everything that the relay is built off of, especially for the main character. And that puts him on a journey where he starts to really, really look at all the different aspects of what the relay offers and decides to kind of dig a little deeper. And the more he digs, the more things don't make sense until it culminates in lots of interesting contradictions about what people are told and what people are supposed to be looking for and working towards. In true Philip K. Dick fashion, reality is a big illusion.
Right on. Right on. Well, I got to say that when I heard sci-fi and I heard the name Andy Clark as the illustrator, right then I was in before I even read what it was about. You know, my all-time favorite Aftershock series, I don't know if you've read Replica by Paul Jenkins, but that series is just amazing, so much fun.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
What's it been like working with Andy on this project?
Working with Andy's been an absolute dream. I mean, like, I'm still relatively new to the industry. I've only been in comics for about a year, and Andy's been doing this for a while. And so I've learned a lot from Andy about storytelling and just like immersing myself in the page and really making each page flow as a singular sort of like storytelling device that leads onto the next sort of scene. And he's been, everything I've given him, he's elevated to a mind-blowing degree, to the point where I'm just like, I can't wait for people to see these issues. Because even the Free Comic Book Day issue, which, you know, typically Free Comic Book Day issues aren't that great. I mean, they're usually drawn by a fill-in artist, or, you know, they only have 8 solid pages of story or whatever. This is 20 pages of Andy Clark's art, and it is gorgeous. And he has completely elevated my script every single time. And he's really, really collaborative. Like, we've had a lot of great conversations about designing the world and hiding details throughout. And right down to, like, there's a couple spaceships in the series and we've designed those together. And he's even taken some of the crazier things that I've given him and completely knocked them out of the park. Like, some of his layouts on this, in the series proper, are going to blow people's minds. I can think of something in issue 3 that reads like an infinity symbol, like the way that he's laid out a 2-page spread that we stole from J.H. Williams. But it's just like, he is doing his best work he's ever done on this, and I just feel so fortunate to be along for the ride.
Well, I can't wait to see it. It's got to be interesting, being that you kind of got the outline for the story from Donnie. Were there a lot of design elements in there, or is this really you taking Donnie's outline and kind of making the story your own, and then working on the character design and the world building with Andy to come up with something that's a little bit of all three of your ideas?
It's a little bit of both. Like, I think what happened is, whenever I was given all of Donnie's documents, him and I jumped on the phone after I had read them, and he was basically like, look, dude, like, this is your story now. So whatever you want to keep, keep, and whatever you want to throw away, like, toss it out. I don't care. And so I changed some of the characterizations of the main cast, just because there were certain things that I thought would appeal more to my strengths as a writer rather than his. And so it was slowly like changing the ethnicity of the main character, the ethnicity of the supporting cast, changing some of the backstory for the main like villain, and kind of filling in a lot of the blanks with things that appealed more to me and my history and like where I'm coming from as a storyteller. And then working with Andy to redesign those characters from the ground up. And then also working on like redesigning the monolith and the ships and everything. So like the actual world details, that was mostly just Andy and I and the characters, but the plot mechanics and everything kind of come from Donnie. He's was very, very generous in terms of giving me kind of the basic structure. And once I had my outline built off of his, he really helped me kind of like shape it into something that's even more exciting. Like there's something built into the end of every one of these issues that's basically a huge what the fuck moment. And I think that that's something that Donnie does really, really, really well in his writing. Like every issue ends and you're just like, Jesus Christ, where is this going to go next? And so I was able to pick up a lot of that from him. So I'm super grateful because it's just, it's working with a group of extremely talented collaborators, and there's a little bit of everyone on every page.
Awesome. Awesome. Was there anything that when you went to design it, you just like threw it to Andy and said, you know what? I don't necessarily have an idea or a thought or preconception. Just surprised me.
Yeah, there was a couple things. Like because I'm a huge Philip K. Dick fan. In particular, I love Total Recall. I mean the film, but also like Flow My Tears, the Policeman Said, is one of my favorite novels. And I really like the Minority Report, the Steven Spielberg film. And I was like talking to Andy about the Steven Spielberg film and basically the mechanics of these like relay police officers that we follow throughout the series. And I was like, okay, well relay is a sound or you can be processed as sound. So I was like, maybe they should use like sound emission weapons. And Andy came up with this thing called the Gib gun. That is this like, it shoots like sound waves, almost like Havoc's blasts from X-Men,
right.
But it pushes every, so it's like a crowd control gun and it flips. So every time characters use it to recharge the like kinetic energy in it, they have to like flip it around in circles. And he completely built that out with like a 3D model and then like rendered it out and showed us. And also there's some other things that I can't talk about, but Andy is incredible at just like building worlds. And there was something he sent me like last summer that we didn't even talk about. And he's like, here's what I'm thinking for this. And it was absolutely mind blowing. I still have it saved on my phone and it's not even in this first arc. It's something that we're building towards. And there's like a hint of it in the Zero issue, but people, when they see what Andy's designed for this thing that's coming, it's going to blow minds.
Wow, that's awesome. You mentioned first arc, so you're hoping that there's more stories to tell in this world?
Yeah, I think it's kind of designed for myself specifically. Like Relay has been a blast to write, but when I'm working off someone else's outline and everything, I started to really kind of wonder how else I could play in this world and what else I could do. And I mean, the Zero issue is entirely set before anything that they gave me. So that's all of my like riffing off of the ideas that they were given or that was given to me and kind of my attempt to expand the world. And so if everything goes according to plan and issue one is received the way that we are hoping, we'll do a second arc of the series for sure. And that's going to deal with a different facet of what's going on and pick up immediately after issue 5, which is a crazy fucking ending.
Awesome. Awesome. Let's talk a little bit about crafting the story for entertainment versus exploring ideas. Cause again, this kind of goes back to us mentioning Infernal Descent before, you know, the Divine Comedy, one of the most examined and kind of respected pieces of literature, you know, ever. So in Relay, you know, we talked about, you know, self-determination and the pros and cons of monoculture and things like that. So is it always a balance when you're crafting the stories, or do you even think about the balance between entertainment and exploring ideas? Like, how does that whole process happen?
It's an interesting thing, right? I think I've picked up some really good lessons from working at Marvel in that there's certain things that appeal to most readers of comics that you don't often think about when you're in the indie world. And, you know, Marvel stuff is very action driven. So that was an interesting thing that I had to kind of bring into Relay, was kind of giving these kind of big sci-fi set pieces that are for entertainment purposes. But with that being said, I tried every single time that there is an action sequence in this book to ensure that it actually had thematic relevance and that it was done in a way that was still exploring ideas and still impactful towards the narrative. Because I think that, you know, comics are supposed to straddle both lines at the same time. They have to be entertaining as fuck, and they have to, you know, you have to make sure that you can't put it down as you're flipping through the pages. But the best work, I think, explores really heady ideas in a completely digestible way. The type of thing that's almost becomes a meta narrative, where you can kind of read it and just have a really base understanding of what's going on and really enjoy it. And then go back through and look at the backgrounds of panels and realize that they're a lot denser and more layered than you think. And on top of that, if you read the whole series for a second time, you'll have a completely different understanding. And I've told people this plenty of times, but like the Zero issue is completely for entertainment and exploring ideas, right? It's this grand kind of statement that raises a lot of questions, but it's not necessary for people to enjoy number one. With that being said, a lot of what is explored in the Zero issue directly or indirectly relates to some of the ideas that are brought up in the fourth and fifth issue. And so if you do read the Zero issue, it's going to pay off in like January of next year.
Well, that's awesome. It sounds like you and I have similar tastes in stories. Like, yeah, you want to read something, you want to be entertained on the surface. But if it's a comic that makes me think, I feel like I'm getting even more value for my story later on. You know, when 2 or 3 days down the line, I'm still thinking about it. That's interesting to me. I like to be able to explore those ideas.
Yeah, me too. I just think that comics are criminally underconsidered as like just pure sort of entertainment reading. And I really do think that they can make grand statements on what it means to be human and be incredibly impactful. Like, I reread Alan Moore's Saga of the Swamp Thing all the time, because I just think it's such an impactful way to deconstruct some of the superhero mythos. And I think that, like, we often kind of look at comics as these like capes and cowls and tights and spandex type of adventures where people are punching each other the hardest, and it doesn't have to be that way. And I think that Aftershock is really interested in telling those stories that are metatextual, that they kind of rely on previous texts and also can be understood all on their own. This is very much in a similar vein to Her Infernal Descent. I think a lot of people who really, really love Philip K. Dick and other science fiction adventures are going to see a lot of the nods and sort of things that we've riffed off of, but it's not necessary to understand the adventure.
Yeah, and honestly, listeners, it's Andy Clark art. You don't really need any other reason to pick it up.
Exactly.
That being said, I'm sure the story is going to be amazing. And for just to let you know, Zach, for me, it's Mark Waid's Irredeemable that I read over and over because there's so much there. I don't know if you've ever...
I have never read it, shamefully, but I put it on my bucket list.
Great. Sounds good. Well, I really want to thank you for your time, Zach. It's been great talking with you. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Not that I can think of. I just hope that everyone gets out there and checks out Relay on Free Comic Book Day. And if they don't manage to grab an issue on the first Saturday in May, which is May 5th this year, don't worry, just pre-order issue 1. And I promise you, you'll still have a fantastic experience. It's not necessary to read the Zero issue.
Great. And for our listeners that want to follow along with your work, where's the best place for social media, like your handles and all that stuff?
You can find me on Twitter at Zach B. E. Thompson and Instagram with the exact same handle.
Great. And I'll put those links in the show notes, listeners. So if you want to follow Zach and find out when his work's on the stand, you can do that there. So again, Zach, I really want to thank you for joining, and best of luck on the series. I can't wait to check it out myself.
Thank you so much for having me, Jason.